iconography, graffiti, flags, etc., and personal iconography, tattoos, logos on clothing, etc. Both of these types of anomalies should be warning flags to combat profilers. Combat profilers should be aware that clothing and other artifacts can often distinguish leaders within groups, and that people communicate messages about themselves based on their clothing and artifacts. We should not ignore the messages that individuals broadcast to those around them. Symbols have meaning. Because certain iconography can be concealed or removed, it may not be identifiable or present in all circumstances. However, being aware of the messages displayed through iconography can make a combat profiler significantly more aware of his or her surroundings. Iconography takeaways. 1. Iconography is not an uncontrollable element of human behavior, so it can be easily masked or concealed, and sometimes requires significant interpretation. 2. Iconography can be geographic or personal, and conveys a person or group's beliefs and affiliations. 3. Graffiti, flags, signs, banners, and posters are often used to mark territory, affiliation, but also convey the beliefs of the group that posted the message. 4. Tattoos and clothing are used for the same purpose, but are personal displays of their beliefs or associations. 8. Atmospherics. The last domain of combat profiling is atmospherics. Atmospherics can be defined as the collective mood of a situation or place. On June 2, 1967, Company D, 1st Battalion, 5th Marines, and Company F, 2nd Battalion, 5th Marines, were patrolling toward an objective near the village of Vinh Huy in Vietnam. As both companies advanced across a rice paddy, the villagers, normally active, seemed silent and still. Livestock and domestic animals did not move. Even the birds went silent. Suddenly, the NVA launched an ambush. Patrick Haley, an anti-tank assaultman with Company F, described the moment before the attack as too quiet, too serene. You could almost smell the presence of the enemy. The collective mood is the combination of the individual moods and emotions of people in an environment. This mood is displayed primarily through nonverbal behavior, biometric, kinesic, and proximic cues, geographic indicators, iconography, and other indicators. Atmospherics is not some mystical feeling or indefinable vibe. Though we may first experience the atmosphere of a situation through an instinct or a feeling, by employing the science of atmospherics, we can break that gut sense down into definable, observable indicators. Combat profiling is about having situational awareness and proactively identifying threats. Being able to read the mood of a situation is part of having situational awareness. The inability to pick up on the atmospherics of a situation can be deadly. Like the customer who strolls into a convenience store and shops without any clue that a robbery is in progress, or the cop who walks into a gas station and does not pick up on the fact that the cashier is being robbed at gunpoint. A marine patrol may fail to pick up on the hostile mood of a village displayed by the locals through negative body language and proximic pushes, which could indicate an imminent attack. Emotions are honest. Atmospherics is not hocus-pocus. The concept of collective mood is a concrete reality. The combination of individual moods and emotions in a situation creates this collective mood. Moods and emotions are true responses to a situation or event. When people seem anxious, tense, or afraid, it is likely that something has occurred or is present that is making them feel and act that way. Emotions and moods are driven by autonomic and subconscious processes in the brain. The part of the brain responsible for picking up on other people's emotions is the amygdala. The amygdala is part of the limbic system. It is also responsible for detecting potential threats and for preparing the body's necessary physiological responses and actions. Because moods and emotions are first experienced subconsciously, In any given situation, we will initially feel what is going on before we become consciously aware of it. Being attuned to your own emotional response in any situation can increase the speed at which you cognitively understand what is going on. This is why we often say things such as, "The situation felt tense," or, "Patrolling through that village made me feel uneasy." We feel the emotion and mood that is expressed through the behavior of others. That behavior is a true indicator of the emotions people are feeling, which is an honest response to something that has either happened, is present, or is about to happen. Moods are contagious. Moods and emotions are also contagious. They pass from one person to another subconsciously through mimicry and other means. This is true particularly of negative emotions. One person with a negative emotion, anger, anxiety, fear, etc., can infect a large group. People mimic others around them. When one person copies another's behavior, the second person will begin to experience the first person's emotion. When an individual senses something and has an emotional reaction such as fear, anxiety, or anger, that person's emotional state can affect everyone else. There are two categories of atmospherics, positive and negative. Just because a place or situation exhibits a positive atmosphere does not mean that we can let our guard down. We must always be suspicious. To borrow Gavin De Becker's idea, we must always have the mindset that an attack will always occur right now. So even when the atmosphere is positive, combat profilers must constantly look for anomalies and threats. A negative atmosphere, conversely, should serve as an immediate alarm that something is wrong. Negative moods and emotions can be categorized as sadness, anxiety, fear, anger, hostility, and contempt. Atmospheric baselines and anomalies. As in the other domains, the combat profiler uses atmospheric indicators to establish a baseline. Every place or situation possesses an emotional atmosphere. This atmosphere will be a true indicator of the emotions and attitudes of the people in the situation. Once the emotional atmosphere of a situation is determined, combat profilers should begin to consciously identify the behavioral indicators that are creating the atmosphere. Even when we are not physically part of an event, say when we are observing from a distance, we can still determine the atmospheric baseline by reading the indicators discussed below. When we are a part of a situation, we will reason first from feel, then confirm our assessment based on observable indicators. When we are observing from a distance, we don't have the luxury of feel. We must determine the atmosphere of a situation based entirely on indicators. Biometrics and kinesics. Since mood and emotion are primarily communicated through nonverbal behavior, these two domains will most likely provide the main indicators. Displays of positive nonverbal behavior communicate a positive atmosphere. A negative atmosphere will be characterized by negative body language, arms crossed, aggressive stances, clenched fists, facial expressions of anger or contempt, people leaning away if sitting down, etc. Proxemics. Interpersonal distance can be a key clue to the atmosphere in a situation. People avoiding or keeping their distance from something or someone may indicate fear or anxiety about whatever they are avoiding. The key is to identify what it is that people are avoiding or keeping their distance from. Aggressive movements toward something or quick movements away from something may also indicate danger or a potential threat. Iconography. The messages displayed in an environment set a mood or tone for that area. The iconography displayed in an area tells us about the beliefs and affiliations of whoever painted, posted, broadcast, or wore the iconography. Additionally, the messages and mood communicated by the iconography have an effect upon those who are exposed to it. Noise level. Every place or situation has certain noises and sounds associated with it. When you walk into your room, you expect to hear certain sounds. When those sounds are altered or absent, you know something is different, perhaps dangerous. The same goes for a street in Los Angeles, a bazaar in Afghanistan, or a key leader engagement in the Middle East. Silence may be explained by two phenomena: lack of noise or auditory exclusion. Auditory exclusion occurs when your brain begins to shut down or reduce your ability to hear any sound or certain sounds in stressful situations. This is related to the tunnel vision discussed in the biometrics section. Your body diverts energy and attention toward the threat or potential threat, and reduces or cuts off unneeded avenues of information. This is why many individuals report hearing nothing or hearing muffled sounds during situations such as a firefight. Studies have shown that between 51 and 84% of law enforcement officers involved in shootings remember experiencing diminished sound perception. True silence can occur because people in an area have fled or hidden themselves because of fear, or because tension or dread has caused people to become silent. Either way, lack of noise in an area or situation in which noise should be present should be taken as an immediate warning. Activity. Downtown Kabul is busy during the daytime. The Wall Street Stock Exchange is a madhouse. People don't generally move frantically and display agitated behavior in places such as a mosque or a funeral home. The category of activity can also include activity over time, such as shops opening and closing at a certain time or times of busy traffic. It is critical to identify the baseline patterns of activity in a location so that you can identify changes. The behavior and level of activity in an area should fit the situation and environment. Any deviation from the norm is an anomaly. Order and disorder. The concept of order and disorder can be applied to a physical environment or to a crowd or group. In a physical environment, order and disorder refer to the way the area looks and whether or not rules are being followed in the area. A recent study has provided support for the broken window theory. This report confirmed that even one element of disorder in an area, for example graffiti, the sound of fireworks in an area in which fireworks are banned, or even something as simple as bicycles chained to a fence, creates further disorder, even criminal activity. Regarding a group, order and disorder refer to the group's behavior. An orderly march or demonstration is obviously different from a hostile and chaotic riot. Between these two extremes exist various levels of order and disorder. The more disorderly a group's behavior, the greater the possibility for violence. Determining anomalies. There are three main types of anomalies associated with atmospherics. 1. An immediate negative atmosphere. Often the combat profiler may not have the time or ability to determine the atmospheric baseline of an area. Many times we simply have to respond based on the current atmosphere without extensive observation. Because this is the case, we should take any negative atmosphere as an indicator that something may be wrong. 2. The individual who does not fit the atmosphere. Because mood is contagious and emotions are honest, we should expect that people's moods and emotions will match each other and fit that situation. We should consider any person an anomaly when their attitude, emotion, or mood and or behavior does not fit what is expected for a situation. 3. A sudden change in mood. In combat profiling, this is called an atmospheric shift. Atmospheric shifts can be both positive and negative. We are primarily concerned with negative atmospheric shifts, but any sudden shift in the atmosphere of a situation should make us take a closer look for other indicators, as well as for whatever caused the atmospheric shift. Atmospheric shifts. Like ripples in a pond caused by the splashing of a stone, atmospheric shifts are the emotional and situational reactions to a development in a situation, such as a person entering the area, something said, or something done. We see things like this on a daily basis. A group of Marines casually talking or interacting will immediately change their behavior as soon as an officer or senior enlisted Marine approaches. Office employees exhibit the same behavior while chatting around the water cooler when the boss approaches. Talking turns to silence, and slouching turns to sitting or standing upright. The same type of behavior was observed by a research team in Afghanistan conducting interviews. At one point during an interview with a young Afghan woman, she suddenly stopped talking and covered her face with her chatter when her soon-to-be mother-in-law stepped into the room. She turned her covered face away from her mother-in-law and didn't say another word. When observing an atmospheric shift, it is important to identify whether the shift was positive or negative, but it is more important to identify what caused that atmospheric shift. The change in atmosphere is the indicator. What changed the atmosphere is most likely the threat. There are two types of atmospheric shifts, positive and negative. That is, the atmosphere of an environment can go from a negative to a positive mood, a positive atmospheric shift, or from a positive to a negative mood, a negative atmospheric shift. Combat profilers should be concerned primarily with negative atmospheric shifts, since they are more likely indicators of a potential threat. For instance, Marines on patrol may be effectively speaking with locals until a Taliban member, unknown to the Marines, approaches. At this point, locals may shut down and stop conversing because they feel intimidated by the individual approaching. Negative atmospheric shifts may be caused by an increase in tension, anxiety, fear, or anger. Indicators of a negative atmospheric shift may be displays of defensive or aggressive body language, increased proximic distance, or silence or stopped conversation. Combat profilers must recognize that they themselves may be the cause of an atmospheric shift. When this happens, a new atmospheric baseline will be established until the combat profiler leaves the area or situation. Further atmospheric shifts may also occur due to the combat profiler's actions or the presence or entry of another individual. By identifying atmospherics, combat profilers can gain an immediate understanding for the moods, emotions, and attitudes of people in any given situation. By quickly establishing a baseline, using one's intuition, and identifying observable indicators, combat profilers can more quickly pick up on anomalies. Combat profilers should be concerned primarily with negative atmospheric moods and negative atmospheric shifts because these are related to potential threats. Atmospheric takeaways. 1. Atmospherics is the collective mood of a situation or place and can provide an immediate indication of safety or danger. 2. Atmospherics are made up of information gained from the other domains, the noise level, the level of activity, and the sense of order or disorder in the area. 3. Positive atmospherics indicate a sense of security. 4. Negative atmospherics are often a left-of-bang indicator of a threat. 5. Negative atmospheric shifts are sudden changes in an area from a positive feel to a negative feel. They should alert the combat profiler to a significant change in the area. Part 4. Taking Action. 1. Deciding to act. Making decisions in combat has never been easy. It's a heck of a lot easier when the enemy is wearing a distinguishable uniform and is directly in front of you. There is no doubt that the Marines and soldiers during World War II or the Korean War had it rough. Modern Marines rarely find themselves rushing a machine gun bunker or wading through 800 meters of surf in an attempt to attack a heavily fortified small island. At least in conventional warfare, the enemy is obvious, whereas in today's irregular warfare, the enemy can be anywhere at any time, and is often not distinguishable from the surrounding populace. It's safe to say that making decisions is much more difficult in the complex, chaotic whirlwind of an environment in which the modern Marine or soldier finds himself today. In today's combat environment, Often the only visible clues of enemy presence or activity are subtle indicators. Children not playing outside, locals avoiding a certain stretch of road, or villagers acting less friendly than usual. The enemy, by and large, doesn't wear a uniform, doesn't declare his intentions, and doesn't stand out from the crowd. Instead, he attempts to blend with the rest of the population. The enemy does his best to mask his intentions, conceal his actions, and make every effort to attack Marines and soldiers at the time and location of his, the enemy's, choosing. Marines returning from combat have described this reality repeatedly. One combat vet described the challenge on the ground with, "What makes this job difficult is that you can't easily distinguish a group of ordinary people doing their ordinary business from armed groups. In an insurgency, you are dealing with civilian-clothed opponents. It's hard to tell who are the Taliban. I am sure there are hardcore elements, but because of the nature of the society, one day you are aligned to the Taliban, the next day to somebody else. The trick for them is to blend in with the locals. The Taliban use communities to play hide-and-seek with us. Until they fire upon our troops, it's impossible to determine their motives. According to the rules of engagement, that's the only time when it becomes obvious who the enemy is." As we have discussed early on, combat profiling provides people with a way to make quick and accurate decisions. The combat profiling heuristic assists in making snap decisions with little time and with little information. The process for making decisions is simple. Establish the baseline, identify anomalies, decide, and act. The key to any decision-making is when to decide. The combat profiling heuristic says that three anomalies are enough to decide. 2. The combat rule of three. Any effective method of decision-making should have a threshold of decision. This is the point at which, no matter what, you must make a decision. A threshold of decision guards against hesitation and indecision due to overanalysis or waiting for additional information. The combat profiling threshold is called the combat rule of three. When you observe three anomalies or indicators, you must make a decision. Do not wait for more information. Three indicators are enough information with which to act. Does this mean that you must have three anomalies to make a decision? No. In some situations, one anomaly or indicator is sufficient. For instance, following the usual rules of engagement, if an individual exhibits a hostile act or hostile intent, one indicator is enough. Someone presenting a weapon in a hostile way toward a Marine on patrol or cop on the street is all it takes to engage that individual with deadly force. Vehicle checkpoints often have a trigger line, a point at which if a vehicle crosses without first coming to a stop and being waved through by friendly force personnel, then the vehicle will automatically either be shot at, with a warning shot, or fully engaged by fire. Again, this depends on the current escalation of force measures. But the trigger line serves as a threshold of decision. No more information is needed. Crossing the trigger line demonstrates a hostile act, and that is enough to make a decision. The reality is that no other information has to be collected in those situations. A Marine providing security for a checkpoint usually only has this one piece of information with which to work. Vehicles approaching a checkpoint with the intent to do harm to the security personnel at the checkpoint often travel at high rates of speed. There is no time to collect any other information. Marines can't converse with the driver or read his intent based on facial expressions or emotions. Yet, a decision must be made. In the majority of situations, one indicator may not be enough. For instance, any internet search of deception detection or lie detection will result in a host of pseudoscience websites and blogs that claim to tell you about how to detect if someone is lying. Many of them list certain foolproof indicators. Common among these foolproof indicators are fidgeting or shaking hands. These websites claim that you can tell that someone is lying based on one indicator. This just isn't true. Paul Ekman, the world's foremost expert on deception detection, writes in his book, Telling Lies, "People would lie less if they thought there was any such certain sign of lying, but there isn't. There is no sign of deceit itself, no gesture, facial expression, or muscle twitch that in and of itself means that a person is lying." In combat profiling, we look for a cluster of cues. We advocate making decisions based on three cues. Once three cues are identified, a decision must be made. The strength of a heuristic is that these decisions are predetermined, and combat profiling provides three main decisions. 3. The three decisions. Before we discuss the three decisions, we should make it clear that the original purpose of combat profiling is to train Marines to be better and faster decision-makers in combat. Therefore, the three decisions reflect that reality. Any application of combat profiling in other situations, by other security personnel, or even the average person wanting to be more aware and stay safe on a daily basis, will have to adapt the decisions to their particular circumstances. On that note, the three decisions that a combat profiler may make are kill, capture, or contact, in that order. What does this mean? It doesn't mean that the first thing that combat profilers do is kill. It means that, in any given situation, in a potentially hostile environment, the first decision that combat profilers should make is to kill or prepare to kill. If an individual does not commit a hostile act, demonstrate hostile intent, or provide indicators of an immediate threat, then the combat profiler moves to the next decision, capture. If the individual does not give off indicators of a potential threat, or if the person does not appear to be of significant intelligence value, then the combat profiler moves to the next and final decision, contact. If for some reason the individual gives off further indicators, then the combat profiler may move back up the decision tree to capture or kill if necessary. Before we briefly explain each of these decisions, we should discuss why our decision tree proceeds from the most violent decision to the least violent. There are two main reasons why our decision-making tree begins with the most violent course of action. First, humans have an internal reluctance to kill. In On Killing, Dave Grossman writes about the nature and effects of killing in humans and states, "I began to realize that there was one major factor that was missing from the common understanding of killing in combat, a factor that answers this question and more. That missing factor is the simple and demonstrable fact that there is within most men an intense resistance to killing their fellow man. A resistance so strong that in many circumstances, soldiers on the battlefield will die before they can overcome it." It is difficult to say exactly why people are reluctant to kill, but as Grossman articulates, there can be no doubt that this resistance to killing one's fellow man is there, and that it exists as a result of a powerful combination of instinctive, rational, environmental, hereditary, cultural, and social factors. This is certainly not to say that soldiers won't or don't kill, but that there is a strong reluctance to killing. Therefore, it is necessary in a combat environment or other potentially hostile situation, which may require responses of deadly force, to begin the decision tree with kill, or prepare to kill, to reduce any chance of rationalizing or backing down from making the tough choice of pulling the trigger. The second and more important reason the decision tree begins with the most violent option is that in combat environments, to not be prepared to take the most violent course of action is to put oneself at risk. In hostile situations, it is much easier to back down from a decision to kill than it is to ramp up to a decision to kill. Furthermore, if the situation is serious enough and if the threat is immediate, then to cycle from contact to capture to kill wastes valuable time. One of the main purposes of combat profiling is to proactively identify threats. This especially means proactively identifying hostile people and preparing to take action once hostile indicators are present. Therefore, combat profilers should begin by assessing whether the most serious decision, kill, is required first, and then moving to the next less serious decision, capture. The first decision, kill, certainly involves the act of killing, pulling the trigger, but also involves the mental determination and physical preparations to kill. Based on the observed indicators, the combat profiler may not have the opportunity to actually see any specific hostile act or hostile intent, or be in the best position necessary to actually pull the trigger and kill the threat. When this is the case, the combat profiler must have the mindset that, when the conditions are right, or when the hostile act is exhibited or hostile intent is expressed, then he will immediately pull the trigger. Therefore, he must prepare to kill, mentally and physically. The second decision, capture, means either physically subduing the targeted individual or individuals, or ensuring that the target cannot egress from the area and escape. This may necessitate physically cordoning off the area and having other individuals control exit points. At this point, the target has given off indicators of such a nature that detention and further questioning is necessary. The third decision, contact, involves either physically contacting the individual through purposeful or casual questioning, or continuing focused observation. At this point, the target has not given off sufficient indicators to be considered an immediate threat or, in warrant, physical detention, but they have presented themselves to be an anomaly, and further investigation or observation is required. The purpose of contacting is to determine whether or not the individual is a potential threat, or if the individual's anomalous behavior warrants any further action. If through either further observation or questioning, the individual is determined to be benign, then the combat profiler lets the individual go and begins again to scan the environment for anomalies. Decisions are situational. There are no decisions that will absolutely apply to all situations. As we have stated above, the decisions kill, capture, contact are only intended to be applied by Marines in a combat situation. The decisions are not to be used outside of a combat situation. We cannot cover every type of situation in which a person may need to make a quick decision. Law enforcement personnel must select and employ a set of decisions that align with current law and their own official procedures. For civilians in non-combat situations, we recommend run, hide, fight. For a civilian who encounters an attacker, the best chance for that person's survival is to put as much distance as possible between him or herself and the threat. The greater the separation, the harder it is for an attacker to be effective, requiring a higher degree of skill to use a weapon effectively and to its fullest capability. When fleeing is not viable, the second option is to hide from the attacker and create as many barriers as possible to avoid being seen, concealment, and to find protection, cover. Finally, the third option exists for the times when all other chances of avoiding confrontation are no longer available. In this case, fighting the attacker through any means available may be the only chance of survival. This option is the last choice, because it is inherently the most dangerous. Some situations may require a different set of decisions, such as when an active shooter has entered into a school. Run, hide, fight is most effective when talking with adults who are able to fully understand and assess the situation, which isn't necessarily the case with small children. For teachers who find themselves in a situation with a shooter, the best course of action is to hide the students and attempt to keep the attacker out of the classroom. The reason we don't recommend that teachers try to evacuate the building with their students is because the risk of a child freezing in a hallway or in the face of an attacker is too high and could risk the lives of a greater number of students. That being said, we understand that every situation is unique, and our goal with this book is to provide you with the greatest amount of time left of bang to recognize the situation and take the action that is best suited for the circumstances you are in. Part 5. Applications. 1. Bringing it all together. On Friday, January 3rd, 2014, 22-year-old Roxana Ramirez was working in the loss prevention department at a Target store in the San Francisco Bay Area when she noticed a man who stood out. Afterwards, she said, Something just didn't seem right. He was acting weird, as if he was up to something. Even though the man didn't steal anything, his behavior piqued her interest, and she intuitively recognized him as an anomaly. Using the store's video surveillance system, she tracked the man out to his car, where he began shaking the steering wheel. While there was nothing she could do or needed to do at that moment, she wrote down the man's license plate number. A few hours later, she learned about an Amber Alert for a 7-year-old girl and thought that the make and model of the abductor's car was similar to the man she followed through Target. She called in a tip. That tip led to the arrest of David Allen Douglas and the safe recovery of a missing girl who was sitting in the back of his car. Miss Ramirez's awareness helped save a girl's life. Because she had been operating in condition yellow and was actively searching for people who stood out from the baseline, she stopped a child abductor. Getting left of bang requires identifying a potential threat before something happens. That something could be an attack, abduction, or even a robbery. The key is to observe pre-event indicators, and to do this it is necessary to be in condition yellow, aware and observant. However, it is also necessary to move beyond simply observing pre-event indicators and concluding that something may happen. Effectively operating left of bang requires taking action. This only happens if you are able to transition from condition yellow into condition orange, and then condition red. Because nonverbal behavior makes up between 60% and 90% of everything that humans communicate, trying to identify potential threats without knowledge of the six domains will be extremely difficult. Some of the examples we have referred to throughout the book are about average folks who, without knowledge of the six domains, were able to operate left of bang and stop potentially disastrous events without having any training in combat profiling. However, their observations were based either on years of experience or a vague gut feeling. Experience is an incredible tool to use. The problem is, it takes years to build. Without explicitly knowing how to look for behavioral pre-event indicators, most Marines, soldiers, police officers, security guards, or others trying to ensure their own safety would have to wait for an event to happen to know something is wrong. This is right of bang. This is reactive. This doesn't have to happen. The six domains of behavior can be explicitly used to establish a baseline and hunt for anomalies. They give the Marine on the ground tangible things to look for and assess. Combat profiling will not remove all the uncertainty that exists in a situation, but it can help Marines focus on the important information and use that to make better decisions. In 2011, one of our combat hunters' instructors was transferred to an infantry unit based out of Camp Pendleton, California, that was scheduled to deploy to Afghanistan. After joining his new battalion, he was assigned as a section leader in the Combined Anti-Armor Team, CAT, platoon. He immediately began training his Marines in the skills of combat hunter, combat tracking, combat profiling, and observation, on top of the numerous required skills that his Marines needed to learn: weaponry, tactics, standard operating procedures, communication, patrolling, etc. Throughout the deployment, he and his Marines used combat profiling and other combat hunter skills with great success. By establishing the behavioral baseline of his area of operation, AO, observing human behavior and identifying anomalies, his CAT section was incredibly successful at reducing Taliban influence, positively influencing the local populace, and hindering the Taliban's ability to operate in the area. Additionally, by employing the principles of tracking as well as establishing baselines and looking for anomalies in the physical environment, he and his Marines spotted numerous improvised explosive devices, IEDs, before the insurgents were able to detonate them. Not one IED detonated on his CAT section. After he returned from his deployment, we interviewed him to see how combat profiling helped him and his Marines in country. This is a part of his response. It wasn't about getting the big wins. For us, combat profiling didn't provide us with one big knockout victory. but it provided countless small wins throughout the course of our deployment. When we first arrived in the area, the local villagers hated us. We would try to start conversations with them, only to watch them turn their backs on us or yell at us to go away. They would say, "Go away, you'll get my family killed." We weren't making much progress. Being a mobile unit, we were moved around a lot and weren't always in the same area, which means we had to constantly work hard to establish a baseline and ensure that we could figure out what was going on in the areas we just arrived in. We began to look at our AO for habitual areas and anchor points. We went where the people were, while other units tried to stay away from those places. Going where the people were often kept us from getting blown up. We established baselines just by observing behavior. We asked, "What do people in this area do day in and day out?" And establishing a baseline was about more than just human behavior. Literally everything in an area is part of the baseline. We were able to identify the signals that the Taliban was using to track our patrol and communicate with one another just by observing anomalies in the area. We found that in each area we went to, we could figure out who the key leaders were simply by observing behavior. Once we were able to identify and talk with the leaders in each of the villages, the locals' attitude toward us quickly changed. There was one guy who we all thought was the village idiot. He didn't work and just seemed to bum around all day. We didn't realize that he was the one in charge. He didn't work because he didn't have to. But after observing him for a while, we noticed that people were constantly coming to him. You see, at first, we thought the key leaders were the oldest males, the senior village elders. We thought the leaders were the ones who were the most vocal, who seemed to speak on behalf of the village. But this was just a front. After observing people's behavior, we began to notice something. That when we were talking to a group of people, certain people would step back. We began to identify the key leaders because their behavior was always a little different than the rest of the people. Sometimes the leader would be the person in the group who wouldn't talk to us at all. We realized that it wasn't the people who were talking to us that were in charge, but the one or two people present who weren't talking to us. Their silence was an anomaly. They were letting their subordinates do the talking for them. We also noticed that the true leaders may not have been verbally responding to the conversations, but they were physically responding. Sometimes it was a change in their facial expressions, sometimes they were physically drawn closer to the conversation, and sometimes it was a clear shift in their body language. And even though they were trying hard to appear uninterested, their behavior gave them away. Once we identified that the quiet ones were the potential leaders, we began to observe where they lived. As we watched some of these individuals further, we would notice people coming and going from their houses at all hours of the day, and in much higher frequency than other houses. We determined their houses were anchor points. So we worked hard to establish a relationship with these people who we thought might be leaders. As we did, we watched the town and our baseline start to change. People began to open up. They became less dominant and uncomfortable in our presence. They would invite us into their houses and even approach our patrol base to talk to us. They weren't afraid of being seen by the Taliban talking to us. They started providing us with information, letting us know where weapons were being hidden and when attacks were planned. As they became more comfortable around us, that became our new baseline. It was all because the person they viewed as the leader had accepted us and was working with us. They were just following suit. As the locals began to support us more, we noticed that the IEDs were being placed further and further from the village. We saw the villages literally become safer to patrol. Being aware of people's behavior helped us to achieve these small victories because we could identify who had the influence over the rest of the villagers. As the local people became more comfortable around us, it also became easier to recognize those who stood out. When we saw people who were clearly uncomfortable in our presence, it would tell us one of two things. Either they were uncomfortable because they were hiding something in their houses or compounds, usually they were Taliban themselves or were Taliban supporters, or they were being watched by the Taliban and were afraid of the consequences if they were seen talking to us. By observing behavior, we were able to find the insurgents hiding in plain sight. This also led to finding more weapon caches. Between these small wins, and using the combat profiling terminology to communicate with adjacent units and in after-action reports, we were able to learn what other units were doing successfully and incorporate that into our operations. But it all started by having a common understanding of human behavior and what the behavior of the villagers communicated. We used combat profiling every single day that we were around the Afghan people. It kept us alive. This Marine and his CAT section used combat profiling on a daily basis to stay alive, influence the villagers they interacted with, identify who were the insurgents or insurgent sympathizers, and locate weapons caches and IEDs. They were able to recognize the behaviors that stood out from the baseline. They were able to identify the true leaders and use that information to their advantage. They saw noticeable and significant shifts in locals' attitudes toward the Marines, which resulted in the villages becoming safer places for the Marines to operate. Taliban influence waned. Marines stayed alive. The six domains of behavior are different lenses to look through to understand the environment and the people in a way that most people have never previously considered. When you begin looking at situations through the lenses of the six domains, you develop better situational awareness and are more likely to pick up on other people's intentions so that you can proactively respond. Many of the behaviors that make up the domains are likely not new to most listeners, and almost everyone has recognized someone who has stood out from the crowd. However, most people don't do anything about what they observe and are caught reacting to a crisis. By employing the principles of combat profiling, you will be better able to observe pre-event indicators, identify that a crisis may occur, and do something about it. Throughout the book, we've talked about different examples of when members of the military or law enforcement have recognized something was wrong. But the applications of these behaviors go well beyond the battlefield overseas or gang-controlled neighborhoods of L.A. The six domains of behavior can be observed everywhere we go. As the story of Miss Ramirez shows, oftentimes it is more important to be aware when you're close to home and where you are likely to feel the safest. Every situation is going to be a little different, and the lens that you use to get left of bang might change. But being left of bang is all about being able to understand the people around you and how their actions indicate their intentions. 2. Applying profiling. It isn't just the benefit of establishing a baseline that you gain by going through the process. The increased understanding of everyone involved is the real accomplishment. This is what will make Marines more adaptable. This is what will make them better hunters. This is what will make them more survivable. U.S. Marine who has attended a combat hunter course. Feedback from the front lines. Following their very successful deployment to Afghanistan from the end of 2010 and into 2011, we had the opportunity to sit down with a group of non-commissioned officers and officers from 2nd Battalion 1st Marines to get feedback on how Combat Hunter helped them while deployed. The goal was to see if there were any gaps in the Combat Hunter course that we could adjust to provide the greatest support for Marines overseas. We came away from the interview very impressed with the Marines' ability to apply what they had learned in their training to the situations they encountered in Afghanistan. That group of Marines agreed that it would take a squad of Marines, 13 Marines, approximately 15 patrols, before they could establish a baseline for the village in which they were operating. This is through no fault of their own. Marines are trained to continually vary their routes to prevent setting patterns. So during those 15 patrols, the Marines were not necessarily exposed to the same areas every time. If that squad was one of three squads at a platoon-sized patrol base, then Marines were being exposed to the local populace and enemy almost 45 times before they felt they really understood the area they were responsible for controlling. These Marines were developing their implicit understanding of that area, but their ability to establish a baseline was hindered, because developing tacit knowledge takes time. Without having a baseline to compare their observations to, Their ability to identify threats and identify people who didn't fit in was greatly reduced during those initial few weeks in Afghanistan. The other reason that this raised a concern for us is that the enemy was able to observe the Marines on 45 occasions, developing their knowledge of the Marines and identifying their patterns. Additionally, it wasn't only the enemy that was observing the Marines, but the entire village. This interview began the initiative to develop a systematic approach to establishing a baseline to shorten the time required to have a functioning understanding of an area at the beginning of a deployment. The added benefit to this is that Marines can control and operate with an explicit understanding of what to look for to more effectively and quickly establish a baseline. Over time, the explicit knowledge that is created on the first few patrols will become implicit and will expand past the results of the first attempts. The immediate goal is to find quantifiable observations that can be communicated across a unit and reduce the continuous exposure needed to create a mutual understanding of an area's baseline. The method we advocate for developing your ability to explicitly establish baselines and applying the combat profiling method is a three-step approach. By consistently and explicitly going through this process, you will quicken your ability to understand your surroundings, speed up your ability to identify anomalies, and ultimately increase your decision-making abilities. The more you use this process, the quicker you'll begin to tacitly evaluate your environment and the less mental energy you'll require to establish baselines and identify anomalies. The three steps can be summed up with a few simple questions. First, what is going on here? Second, what would cause someone to stand out and why? Third, what would I do about it? The key to combat profiling is understanding the behavioral patterns of an area and individuals, establish the baseline, and then identifying those individuals or situations that break the patterns, find the anomalies. What is going on here? The first step begins by making a quick and immediate assessment about the atmospherics of the area. At first glance, does the area have positive or negative atmospherics? If the area has positive atmospherics, is there anyone whose attitude or behavioral cluster doesn't fit the baseline? This person may warrant a second look. If the area has negative atmospherics, is there anyone in the area who is displaying the comfortable cluster? The first step is designed to quickly determine if there is anyone blatantly deviating from the baseline. The key questions are, what is the general feel of the place? What is the common emotion? Is it positive or negative? What are the common or consistent behaviors among people in the area? Are people comfortable, uncomfortable, relaxed, aggressive, etc.? What defines this situation? Order, disorder? Busy, slow, crowded, uncrowded? The second element of understanding what is going on here is to determine the type of place you're in based on geographics and iconography. Geographics defines the large-scale patterns of an environment or situation. Iconography provides further atmospheric indicators and gives you a sense of the groups and messages affiliated with the area. Atmospherics and proxemics help to interpret the geographic behaviors. The key questions are, where am I? Am I in, or observing, a habitual area or an anchor point? Are the anchor points within the habitual area? Who controls them? What behaviors or indicators identify the anchor points? Are there people providing overwatch or physical security? Are there passive security measures, for example, cameras, fences? Are most people avoiding a specific location, while only certain people are proximally pulled to that location? What are the natural lines of drift? Where are people headed? Ultimately, the combat profiler is attempting to determine the large-scale behavioral patterns in order to establish a standard against which to judge anomalies. As the combat profiler asks and answers these questions, he or she should also attempt to identify the underlying cause for the observed behaviors. For example, why is the place crowded? Why are people keeping a certain distance from one another? Why is the atmosphere positive or negative? Finally, the third part of answering the question of what is going on here is to understand the behavioral patterns that are occurring and identify the processes that are unique to the area you are observing. This third step takes the observations down to the micro level and is focused on individuals and groups of people. The key questions are, what patterns of movement do I observe? Are people being proximally pulled toward or pushed away from someone or something? What distance are people keeping from one another? What activities do I observe? While working through this first step, the combat profiler should not disregard appropriate assumptions in helping to judge the observations being made. We believe it is important to use the knowledge of parallel situations from other contexts to develop reasonable assumptions for what types of behavior to expect. For example, while a market in downtown Los Angeles will look different and have different behaviors present than a bazaar in the Middle East, similarities in behavioral patterns will still exist. This is due to shared human nature, which restricts and encourages similar types of behaviors in the two situations. Trading, selling, bargaining patterns caused by proximic necessities and spatial organization and various other elements create numerous similarities between a U.S. market and a Middle Eastern bazaar. Forming useful and effective analogies is key for combat profilers. They provide the combat profiler with initial sets of expectations and assumptions that can be quickly confirmed. These assumptions will sometimes need to be corrected, but they speed up the observational process and are better than starting from scratch. Almost all aspects of human behavior can be potential elements of a baseline. When people get up, when locals visit the marketplace, when people go to sleep, traffic patterns, greeting behaviors, and numerous other behaviors. It is important that combat profilers are explicit about what types of behaviors they are using to establish the baseline for the area and ensure that they record their observations. Combat profilers should also consistently update baseline observations as behaviors shift and change over time. What would cause someone to stand out and why? The second step moves the combat profiler toward more focused and specific observations, with the distinct goal of being prepared to identify anomalies. While the first step provides the combat profiler with a picture of the norm, during step two, the combat profiler focuses his or her observations on those things that would go above and below the norm, the things that don't fit the situation. Here, the domains that are of most help are proxemics, kinesics, biometrics, and iconography. Proxemics help to identify unusual movement and placement of individuals. Kinesics and biometrics help to identify those whose emotions, attitudes, and intentions do not fit the normal emotions, attitudes, and behavior of the situation. Iconography will help to identify affiliations, motivations, and messages. The goal is to begin mentally preparing to identify the person who stands out. The key questions to ask during this step include, who seems familiar or unfamiliar with the area? Who has access to anchor points? What is the clothing and behavior of those individuals? Who appears uncomfortable, dominant, interested, or uninterested? Whose movement appears aggressive? Who is proximally too close or pushed too far away? Whose behavior appears unnatural or distracted? Whose attention appears divided? Whose iconography associates them with hostile or threatening causes? Which individuals in the crowd may be affiliated with one another based on similar iconography? Is anyone exhibiting smuggling behavior or checking his or her six? Does anyone's biometric cues indicate distress, discomfort, anger, anxiety, or other negative emotions? What would I do about it? The third step is simply to think about the action you would take based on your observations. This is the application of the combat profiling heuristic. The first question, is anyone an obvious hostile threat? If so, what is your plan to deal with it? If not, than is anyone giving off three or more behavioral indicators that they are an anomaly. Remember, when you observe three indicators, you have to act. Decide which type of behaviors would warrant different responses. Action may simply be contacting the person to ask